following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to our Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast. Alongside Tom Silverstein, I am Olivia Reiner. The Packers are the number one seed in the NFC, which means they get a first-round bye through the playoffs, home field advantage as well. Big victory last night against the Chicago Bears, 35-16 win to seal the deal and to propel them forward into the playoffs. Not just yet. They get a nice little week off before they rejoin the pack to become one of the eight teams in the quest for the Super Bowl this season. Tom, how good do the Packers feel after last night's win heading into the bye and now the playoffs?
Well, they should feel pretty good about it. I think they won a game that was tough. I think that was probably the best thing that could happen to them, is that they really had to battle to win that game. It's just one of those things where I think it's better to have to fight your way to where you want to get than it is to have to just kind of cruise in or do what Kansas City did, which was rest everybody. I mean, it's nice if you can do that, but I honestly think it's better to have to win a game that clinches it. So I think all things said, they had to make some stops on defense. They had to play well offensively. They had to figure out what it was that they could handle, what it was they could do to move the ball against Chicago. And it was a little bit of a struggle, and that's what's going to happen in the playoffs possibly. So I thought it was a good game for them to prepare them for the playoffs.
The Packers were up 21-13 at the half, nothing too crazy to write home about. And then the dreaded third quarter rolled around. The Packers offense just seems to sputter in the third quarter before they were able to get back on the board in the fourth a couple of times and to seal the deal. So then you're, as you said, Tom, never in a position really to rest their starters, which I know going into this game, Packers fans are getting questions on the live stream on Twitter. What would have to happen for the Packers to rest Aaron Rodgers at the half? And they never got there. So now your starters aren't taking 2 weeks off, right? Next week, yeah. This is a bye week coming up. They're going to have some time off. What does having that, I guess it's not even an added game, but you know, how significant is it to have the players, your starters play in the final game of the regular season and to be able to have that week off the following week and not take 2 weeks off away from the game?
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, the point is that it's not an inordinate amount of time. So it's the same as having a bye week during the season, and that's familiar to most, you know, to the players. So it's not like they're having a 2 week shutdown or something strange like that. This is a normal activity. And I think the fact that they didn't, as far as we could tell, suffer any really significant injuries, even injuries that might keep someone out in 2 weeks, was really critical. So now they're not just nursing injuries to try to get guys back. They're actually just nursing injuries to make guys feel like they're 100%, you know, and that they've been rested. So I think that's the huge, huge part of having a bye week. You know, I've seen in years where under McCarthy, where they've had a bye or they've had a little bit of time, and it's been about getting someone back, you know, getting someone healthy after they've been missing a bunch of time. And that's not the case here. Now it's about just resting bodies and being sharp in the first game back.
It was, I believe, inside linebackers Chris Barnes, Kamal Martin, and defensive lineman Tyler Lancaster who briefly left the game. Maybe I'm talking like a few plays, and I think it happened maybe to Chris Barnes a couple of times against the Bears. However, yeah, they came back. Everyone came back.
Chandon Sullivan too.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Chandon Sullivan as well. So no long-term concerns that we know of yet, at least, coming out of last night's game, which is a victory in and of itself. So that's certainly something positive to take forward into the playoffs. Then, of course, the Packers offense. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had another really strong night. He completed all 10 of his passes in the first half and ended up finishing 19 for 24 for 240 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 147.9 passer rating. He now has 48 touchdowns, a career high, which eclipsed his career high back in 2011. We've had this conversation on the podcast before, but I don't think we've discussed it recently. Where does Aaron Rodgers stand after last night's game in the MVP race, Tom?
Well, you have to think he locked it up. I think just his numbers, the fact that they won, he was a major factor. I really, that was sort of my barometer was going to be this game for my assessment of whether he was MVP. I think he and Patrick Mahomes were neck and neck. And I think I wanted to see how he would do on the road in a clutch game that they needed for home field advantage. And he came through. It was a must win for home field. And not only that, he was a major contributor. He was a good part of the reason why they won, because he just made so many good decisions. The most impressive, I led my column with it, was the long completion to Valdes-Scantling, where the clock is running down and he's supposed to move Jamal Williams from the far left all the way to the backfield. And you can hear it on the copy, you know, on the microphone, he's like, stay there. And because if Williams comes, then the clock runs out, the play clock, and they have to call timeout. He just tells them stay there. He sees the Bears are completely messed up on defense, and he sees that there's a linebacker on Valdes-Scantling, and he's like, I gotta get this play off. So he does, and throws a 72-yard touchdown. And, you know, his stats would have been he'd have been well over 300 yards if Valdes-Scantling doesn't drop that other bomb. So he played like an MVP. And, you know, I haven't been the cheerleader that some have been for him, but I was impressed with this game. And to me, that solidified it.
I got a comment from someone on Twitter last night saying, oh, maybe Tom will be enthusiastic on the podcast today. And I think that was
enthusiastic as I get.
Yeah, that was like pretty close to enthusiasm. So you're going to be pleasing the masses today, Tom. You have no idea. So that's a pretty arousing statement. You know, for what Aaron Rodgers has done this season, certainly impressive for him. And then Devontae Adams as well. Bit more of a quiet night. The Bears were able to, I think no one can shut him down, but at least take him out of the game a little bit. 6 receptions for 46 yards and a touchdown for Devontae Adams. However, it was enough for him to lock down some milestones as well. So he's now tied Sterling Sharpe's single season franchise touchdown record with 18. He had he finished the season now with 115 catches, which passes Sterling Sharpe's franchise record of 112 set back in 1993, the franchise touchdown record set in 1994. So Devontae Adams right on up there in the history book still. But looking at what the Bears were able to do to him in particular last night, it did open up opportunities for other players as well. You saw other people get some touchdown passes. Tight end Dominique Daphne gets his first career touchdown on his second career catch too. Robert Tonyan gets a touchdown as well. So, you know, how did the Bears plan for Devontae Adams affect the offense as a whole?
This is a huge angle to this story, I think, and also moving forward is very significant. So we've seen in two of the last 3 weeks that teams have decided that Davante Adams isn't going to beat them. They're going to do everything they can to stop Davante Adams. They're not as worried about Aaron Jones as they are Davante Adams. And we saw that with the Bears. They put their best corner, Kyle Fuller, on him, and they doubled him quite a bit. And the problematic part of this that I think Matt LaFleur has to and his staff have to address during this bye is they were late in figuring out that they needed to do something. They needed to be proactive to get Davante Adams open. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter that they decided they were going to move him into the slot and start getting him the ball, moving him around rather than trying to force, their real plan was to do it organically, which is we'll run the ball, have success running it, and then they're not going to be able to double Davante Adams, or we're just going to run it and win, and Davante Adams won't have a bunch of catches. But it wasn't working out that way. The Bears with Akeem Hicks were stuffing the run pretty well. And so they have to be quicker to make that move to adjust for Davante Adams if he's getting doubled. They have to go into these games assuming that's going to happen and be ready for it. So if they play Tampa, for instance, in the first round, they got to figure out how to get him going right away because Tampa is going to be able to play the run and they're not going to be really as intimidated about Aaron Jones. So that's something to watch, and I'm interested to hear what LaFleur has to say about that too.
The Bears were able to hold the Packers to under 100 rushing yards as a whole. Aaron Jones, just 11 attempts for 42 yards, averaging 3.8 yards per carry. He had a rushing touchdown. Jamal Williams, 5 carries for 26 yards, 5.2 yards per carry for him. And A.J. Dillon, just 1 touch last night, a 3-yard run for him. Was there anything that Matt LaFleur could have done to try to get the run game going and commit a little bit more?
Well, he had one problem that made it difficult, and that was that the Bears controlled the clock. The Bears ran, I'm looking it up here real quick, the Bears ran 74 plays to Green Bay's 44. So, I mean, that's just a massive difference. It's hard to get a run game going when you're running almost half the plays that the other team is running. So I don't know what he could have done to get more carries to those guys other than have his defense play better. It was just one of those games where they weren't going to have very many carries. They needed to make the most out of the ones they had. And maybe that's where maybe they needed to start inside out, which was, okay, we're going to use the pass to set up the run. And that might have been their only mistake in this game, was that they figured they could try to run it and they couldn't. So I don't know what else he could have done because of the number of plays. Chicago just was dead set on dinking and dunking, and they did a great job of it. That's how they kept themselves in the game.
They dinked and dunked, and the Packers defense bent but did not break. So the Bears
poet.
Yes. What a transition. And then I botched right coming out of it. It's all good. Maybe next time. The Bears went 6-15 on third down, 40%, which by offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, that is a playoff team. And on fourth down, the Bears had 6 fourth down attempts and were able to convert 5 of them. However, the Packers defense in the red zone, 1 of 5, goal to go situations, 1 of 4. So when it really mattered, the Bears were only held to no points or worst case scenario field goals. How much of a confidence boost is that for the Bears Packers defense heading into the playoffs in a couple weeks?
Well, I'm not sure. For one, I got to look this up, but I wonder if ever a team has gone 5 of 6 on fourth down against a Green Bay Packers defense. That's incredible if you think about it. I mean, what's the league average of fourth downs, I wonder? I could look that up, but I'll try to look it up before we're done. So there's a couple of things. I think the crowd is going to hate me for this, but I don't care. Everybody hates me anyways. So
let's go.
Mike Pettine did the right thing. So his philosophy was, okay, they're going to dink and dunk us, but we are not going to let anything get over our heads. We're not going to allow, you know, if Mitch Trubisky is going to drop back and pass, we're going to pick him off, or we're going to do, I mean, if he's going to try to throw it long, we'll be ready for that. But if he wants to try to dink and dunk his way to touchdowns, we can live with that. And it's not that they weren't stopping him. It was that Trubisky was doing, or not trying to stop him. It was that Trubisky was doing a great job finding the open receivers. But when you get down to the red zone, it gets much harder to do that. And that's the whole philosophy of bending but not breaking, is that, okay, you're playing a quarterback who can't hurt you down the field. So don't let him do that. And then you get to the end of the game and you're assuming, you know, Pettine's assuming his offense will have scored some. And then you get Trubisky in a situation where he has to move the ball down the field. And what happens? Adrian Amos, he makes a terrible throw, which you expect, and Adrian Amos picks him off. The weak part about it, the part that didn't quite go the way he had hoped, was that they never got them in third and long. You know, they were getting 8 yards on first down, and that was killing them. That was allowing them to get drives, keep drives going. So they couldn't get a sack. They couldn't get a stuff on first down. They needed to do something like that more often than they did. But ultimately, I think it was a good performance. It could be better. And I think late, they started being more aggressive at corner. You know, they started jamming guys and not quite being as afraid of letting guys get behind them. I think when that happened, then they started having more success.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fourth and shorts, as you're referencing, as you're alluding to here, Tom, the Packers, I mean, it was essentially a guaranteed fourth and one. I mean, there's some fourth and threes in there, but you know, pretty easy for the Bears to take advantage of that. And I'm sure the Bears analytics guys were all just pumping their fists in the coaches' boxes, seeing head coach Matt Nagy go for it so many times on fourth down.
Yeah, but
to be in that scenario.
I'm looking at these drives. Like, here's the first drive. These are their third downs, third and one, third and three, third and two, fourth and three, second and two. Then you go to their next drive and it's he didn't have any third downs on that one, but anyway, you get the point. They had one long third down,
and that was when they were able to force the Packers defense was able to force a punt.
Yes, right. And then they had the fumble and they had a third and three and they didn't make that, but you get the point. They had all these really short third downs and That's tough. And Trubisky, here's another criticism. I won't go completely bonkers over giving Pettine credit. Was why didn't they play Damon Harrison on some of those short yardage sneaks? I mean, why did you sign the guy if you're not going to put him smack dab in the middle to stop Mitch Trubisky? So I think he figured that out later. At the end, they started putting him in there on fourth downs or third and short.
He did. It did take a little while till we got to see number 98 on the field. He was kind of like just standing. I don't even know. He wasn't even standing with the defense for parts of the game. Like, he was kind of just off to the side.
Is that right? I didn't see that.
Really? There was at one point he was like standing by the bench, like while the defense was, I think maybe they were, I don't know if they were in the game. I don't know. I was confused as to what was happening, but ultimately how many snaps did he end up playing? He played 12 snaps. So is that about what you expected in Harrison's debut? Yeah.
I predicted it would be 15 to 20. In the blog, someone asked me how many I thought he would play, and I thought it would be about 15.
So, yeah, 12 defensive snaps is 16% of the defensive snaps last
night. Yeah, he probably should have played a little bit more, I think. And that's part of maybe he didn't know all of their defense, but really, fourth down, all you need to do is trash the center so that Mitch Trubisky can't run over him. I that part I don't get.
Well, not for us to get, Tom, just for us to think about.
For us to criticize.
Exactly. Easy for us to say. So you do mention, you mentioned the fumble. Tavon Austin fumbled on the punt return on what would have been the Packers' second possession of the game, however, gave it right back to the Bears. And the Bears were only able to punch in a field goal, so the Packers' defense was able to, you know, at least prevent some points from going on the board. But yeah, you look at the Packers special teams as a whole. I know we've talked about this every week, and we've had to, but you see a costly fumble to some extent. Mason Crosby to open the game, a kickoff that is, toward the sideline, and return specialist Cordarrelle Patterson makes a very savvy move getting out of bounds. And I mean, I guess we could debate whether or not he was actually out of bounds. But regardless, still, you know, what was the ball doing over there anyway? So,
yeah, I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. So, you know, special teams has been a problem. Now, Sean, man, you can't blame Tavon Austin fumbling on Sean Menenga, but you can blame him for Crosby kicking to the corner. That's obviously what the strategy was to start against Patterson. And they didn't think he could, I mean, did they not think Crosby could get it into the end zone? Because he got it into the end zone almost every time after that. So he kicks it, and that essentially was why the Bears were able to jump out to a 7-0 lead. They had a short field, 60 yards. That's all they had to go. And, you know, I'm looking after that, he kicks away, touchback. He made a tactical mistake. There's one time Patterson had a 33-yard return, but that's when Dominique Daphne came down and drilled him right after he had scored a touchdown. So I think that's a miscalculation on Menenga's part. Once again, that's going to be really a real Achilles heel going into the playoffs. And they are going to absolutely hate themselves if they get knocked out of the playoffs because of special teams.
Yeah, you know, I was having this conversation with Ryan Wood, fellow Packers news reporter, last night in the car on the way back from Chicago, the lovely drive. And we were talking about this, you know, is this a team that can go to the Super Bowl? Like, you know, where are their weaknesses? Where are their strengths? And naturally, you know, Packers offense has been extremely strong. The Packers defense has come on in the last several weeks and has improved as the season has gone on. And the Packers special teams have been consistently, actually, it's probably been, they've gotten worse since the start of the season. And you can count on them to screw something up week to week. So Tom, I'm curious, of all the teams that you've covered in your time on this beat, which team does this most remind you of? And, you know, how can special teams really play a factor down the stretch for some of these teams?
Oh, I think you have to go right to the 2014 team, which goes to the NFC Championship game in Seattle and just jumps out on the Seahawks, and it looks like they're going to walk away to the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden their special teams just falls apart, and they allow a fake field goal for a touchdown. They give up a 2-point conversion. That's not special teams, but sort of is. They give up the, of course, famous onside kick. That cost them basically that and a few other plays cost them a trip to the Super Bowl. And that's how it can be. And it could be like that this year. I don't know what Matt LaFleur is going to do, but he's got to do something. He's got to make sure. I don't know if it requires. I remember one year, Mike Holmgren back in the 90s, their special teams were awful. And he assigned each of his assistant coaches to help out on a segment of special teams. So not only did they have to do their job, they had to help the special teams coach in a certain area. And it did help. I mean, they played better special teams. And by the time they got to the Super Bowl in 96, they had a fantastic special teams unit. And not just Desmond Howard, but they had really great coverage units and blocking units. So he's got to figure out something. I think that's worth asking about too. He's got to figure out how they can just stabilize them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they've got a whole week to really do some self-scouting, which we know they like to do during the regular season bye week, but now they get an extra one. So we'll see exactly what that self-scout leads to. When we get to check in with the coaching staff, not only today, but going forward into next week as well. One of the things we did not talk about, Tom, and in fact, we recorded our podcast right before this happened earlier in the week, or I suppose later in the week last week. So left tackle David Bakhtiari sustained a season-ending knee injury in practice. And he is out, like I said, season-ending, out for the season, which is a terrible loss for the Packers. Absolutely terrible. To happen in practice, it's awful. And it's the second season-ending knee injury on the Packers offensive line, with guard Lane Taylor also out for the season in week one. So, and it's the fifth knee injury that the Packers offensive line has had to deal with this season. So, I mean, we've been talking about it all season, but the O-line has just been absolutely jumbled on a weekly basis because of injury. And now this week was no different. So Billy Turner split out to left tackle, Elgton Jenkins stayed at left guard, Corey Linsley at center, Lucas Patrick at right guard, and Rick Wagner at right tackle. Overall, how did they fare without Bakhtiari against the Bears?
I would say it was a fair performance. I think they had their issues. They couldn't block Akeem Hicks. And that was the downside. That, to me, that was the worst thing that happened with losing Bakhtiari, was that all of a sudden you took Billy Turner out of right guard, where he and has so much more size to deal with Akeem Hicks, and the ability with him and Linsley to double team Lucas Patrick. That's a mismatch. Akeem Hicks against Lucas Patrick is a mismatch. I haven't watched the game close enough to know whether he got knocked around, but I know Akeem Hicks was in on a lot of plays. And Turner had a holding call that it was smart for him to hold because Rodgers was going to get killed if he didn't. But he got beat on that. I saw, there was some leakage on that part, on that side. But let's remember, this guy had one day of practice at left tackle. He's practicing at right guard for how long now? He's been at right guard for at least 3 weeks.
A few weeks, yeah.
And then a day before, or 2 days before the game, he's like, they tell him you got to be at left tackle. So you got to cut him a little slack on that one. But whoever they face next time, they're going to put their best pass rusher over there and test him. And Wagner looked like he re-injured his knee early in the game. And you got to give him a lot of credit. He really gutted it out. But I think, the protection was okay. Excuse me. Rodgers only got sacked once, so you can't really complain with that too much. It's just the running game really never got going.
No, and perhaps that's where they will miss Bakhtiari going forward. I guess we'll see as the playoffs shake out. But, injuries – Packers, this has been a tough season. You know, I'm thinking about it. The Packers finished 13-3 for a second straight season. And last season, that was enough for the second seed. This season, it's enough for the first seed. But you think of the circumstances. I mean, this season has just been so different from an injury perspective. I mean, yeah. So many season-ending injuries. They have 11 players on IR right now, and they've lost key players for like multiple game portions of the season, from Davante Adams to Aaron Jones to Kenny Clark to Corey Linsley to Kevin King. I mean, this team has managed to do as well as it did last season, amid a year where there's been a lot of injury, and not to mention they're playing in the middle of a pandemic. Is 13-3 different this year than it was last year?
I think it is. I think it's a more solid 13-3 because offensively last year, they were just sort of feeling themselves out. They were not as consistent. They weren't a 40-point or 30-point a game team. And you can pretty much bet your house that they're going to score around 30 points every week and get over 400 yards or get around 400 yards. So I think that's the big difference with them this year over last year. Now, the defense isn't making as many big plays as it did last year. That's a difference too, but I still think they're more of a solid team. I think their offensive line's playing at an extremely high level. It was, especially when Bakhtiari was in there. Those are the differences. Rodgers is playing at a way higher level than he did a year ago. They got a tight end that can stretch the field. That's a huge difference. And then Adams is playing the best football of his life. So all of those things make them better than they were a year ago.
All of those things add up to a first round bye and home field advantage through the playoffs for the first time since 2011. It has been years since the Packers have had that luxury, the possibility of having the road to the Super Bowl run through Lambeau. And this year, unfortunately, it's going to be not in front of fans. So any advantage that having a home crowd at Lambeau Field would bring to the Packers, whether the Packers, you know, using the silent count, having just, you know, the noise inside of Lambeau, that won't be a factor. However, the weather will be a factor. January in Lambeau, welcome to Green Bay. It's going to be disgusting, most likely. And by just disgusting, it's just going to be cold. Not actually disgusting, but you know, what advantages do the Packers have now with that top seed?
Well, so it's, we do, and I talked about it as well, said that, you know, weather could be a factor because in January it often is, but for weather to be a factor, it has to be pretty bitterly cold or it has to be snowing. Even if you bring Tampa in and it's 35 degrees, it's not that big of a deal, in my opinion. Tom Brady has played in every horrible condition known to man, so it's not going to affect him as much. Bitter cold does. Bitter cold, if you don't live in bitter cold. But even then, in 2013, San Francisco came in with Colin Kaepernick as their quarterback, and maybe it's because he has was born in Wisconsin. They came in and they played the Packers toe to toe and ended up beating them. You know, a California team comes in 0 degrees weather and beat the Packers. So it can happen. It's just it has to be bitter cold, and snow and wind are what make it the most difficult for teams when they're not used to it.
So this week,
keep an eye on the forecast.
Yes. Get on your local weatherman, if you're local to Green Bay, and plug in, keep an eye on the radars. Because I think it could be a big factor heading into the playoffs for the Packers with that home field advantage. All right, Tom, first round bye. Packers are off this week. It is Monday. So That's a break. We know during the regular season that the Packers were required to stick around town due to the pandemic. So they did not go anywhere besides the facility and their own homes. How does that change in the playoffs at all, if at all?
It doesn't. And they, if they were disciplined during the bye week, they have to be double disciplined this week. I think Rodgers said it best. Actually, LaFleur said it best. He's like, they need everybody at their best. And to be at your best, you have to be available. So it doesn't do you any good to have this nice week of rest if you're doing risky things and potentially getting COVID and they have an outbreak. And let's face it, if you get it or if there's an outbreak, sorry, there's no rescheduling games. Playoffs are playoffs. I know they've talked about the possibility of using that bye week before the Super Bowl to reschedule games, but I don't think that's going to happen. So it's up to you. And the Packers have been great about it. You know, two cases all year long. It's a miracle. I mean, they live in a hotbed of COVID and they've managed two. So it would be really stupid on their part if they were to get risky now. So I'm sure LaFleur is saying that every time he meets with the team.
Stay home, play Call of Duty, hit up Xbox, PlayStation. I have a feeling there will be a lot of video games in their future this bye week, but you got to do what you got to do. Tom, is there anything else that you want to hit on before we wrap things up today?
I think that is about it. We will have a podcast this week, but probably not on Sunday, since they won't be playing on Sunday. But we'll figure out a schedule for next week, whether we need to do one Monday or whatever.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, I mean, we get to be couch potatoes on Saturday and Sunday and just enjoy a super wild card weekend. That's what they're calling it this season.
Six games, three games each day. Wow.
My brain is just going to turn to mush by the end of the weekend. I won't know.
You know, and if this were non-COVID time, we'd probably be covering some of those games, you know, because we'd be covering probably the opponent that they might be playing. I would love to go see Tampa play Washington, right?
Yes. Yep, they're going up to Washington.
Yeah, so that would be fascinating to see that, but I'll just be watching it on TV.
Take what you can get. Yep. Hopefully everyone enjoys the football selection this upcoming weekend and the week off, a week for everyone to recharge too before we're all plugged back into the playoffs. So thank you all so much for following along with us, for consuming all your content over at PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com. Make sure you're subscribed to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tom and I appreciate you listening very much. We'll talk to you next time.